Lake Effect continues now. I'm Bonnie North. Before the break, we heard from the widow of Father James Groppi, a major player in the civil rights movement here in Milwaukee. But the civil rights movement had many leaders and many significant moments. Through them all, Frank Aukofer recorded the facts, faces, and happenings as a civil rights reporter for the Milwaukee Journal. Aukofer would later serve as Washington bureau chief for the Journal and its successor, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, from 1970 to 2000. He chronicled his observations of race relations in Milwaukee and elsewhere in the nation in his 1968 book, City with a Chance, A Case History of Civil Rights Revolution. He recently spoke on the phone from Seattle with Lake Effect's Stephanie Lecce and recalled what it was like to cover the biggest story of the day. He starts by comparing the 1967 riots in Detroit to the subsequent riot in Milwaukee on July 30th and 31st.
It was much bigger, for one thing. There were a whole lot more people killed. The National Guard was out. The city was locked down with curfews and so forth. And it's a much bigger city, of course. You know, compared to the one in Milwaukee, it was much bigger and more extensive. They were both similar in the fact that they had similar causes, I think, and the frustrations of a lot of people. In fact, there were some people who didn't really want to call the Milwaukee riot a riot, even though it was, but some people just referred to it as a civil disturbance that came about because of a police incident down in the inner city.
Well, what was the relationship between whites and blacks in Milwaukee leading up to when the civil rights movement really began to gain ground in Milwaukee, and during the civil rights movement? What was the attitude of whites toward blacks at that time, and vice versa?
Well, again, you can't generalize about these things because there were an awful lot of good people on both sides. I mean, there were a certain number of white people, of course, who wouldn't set foot in the inner city and, you know, had a degree of prejudice against black people. But there were an awful lot of other people of goodwill who didn't get involved in that. Similarly, in the black community, you had people who were resentful of whites who were holding them back and so forth. But at the same time, you had a lot of very kind of conservative black people. In fact, I remember during some of the open housing marches where the black folks sitting on their porch were telling the marchers to get out of their neighborhood because they didn't like all the commotion. So it's not a simple equation. You can't really stereotype the white people or the black people in Milwaukee.
You had the opportunity to go down to Selma with a few of the priests from Milwaukee who were participating in the activities down there. And one of the things that you reflect not only in City Without a Chance about, but also in your upcoming memoir, is this idea that they went down there and participated, but were kind of sent back with this call to deal with the racism and the racial tensions in their own backyards.
Well, I think most of the people who did that were trying to deal with it in their own backyard, but the Selma March at the time was the most dramatic thing that was going on in the country, and there was a Unitarian minister who was murdered in the streets of Selma, and that sort of triggered a whole bunch of clergymen and nuns and so forth to go down there and participate and bear witness, I guess, against the racism and against the violence that was happening down south. But they came back, of course. One of them was Father James E. Groppi, who was the one of the civil rights leaders in Milwaukee, and he came back, of course, and started fighting for open housing in Milwaukee. And we also had a couple of school boycotts with different principals in that. That wasn't really a Groppi thing, although he participated. So they were basically trying to take care of injustices that they saw in society, both down south and in Milwaukee. It was much more blatant down south, you know, because they had poll taxes and restrictions on where people could go and stay and so forth. It was much more subtle in Milwaukee, but it was there nonetheless.
Yeah, you compared it in City with a Chance to beating your head against a wall of gelatin.
Well, I mean, the problem in a place like Milwaukee was that it was much more subtle. You didn't have, you know, a Bull Connor in Birmingham turning fire hoses on demonstrators. What you had in Milwaukee more was people who just, you know, like the mayor of Milwaukee who said, well, you know, we're not against open housing for the people of Milwaukee, but the suburbs got to participate too because we don't want all the white people fleeing Milwaukee because we're the only ones with an open housing law.
Well, you'd brought up before Father Grappi, and I wanted to have you talk a little bit about him. Obviously, a lot has been said about him, and he was a very polemic figure at the time. What did he represent in the Black community at that time? And then, alternately, what did he represent to whites in Milwaukee at that time?
Well, I mean, again, you can't stereotype this sort of thing. There were a number of people in the white community who supported what he was doing and thought what he was doing was just fine. In fact, the Archbishop of Milwaukee at the time was a quiet supporter of what Grappi was doing. He refused to condemn him. But then you also had people standing out there calling him a white nigger, you know. So he was a polarizing figure all the way across the board. In the Black community, there were some Black folks who thought he was agitating too much and bringing police and National Guardsmen and so forth into their community. And yet there were other people who practically worshipped the ground he walked on. The little kids from the NAACP Youth Council, where he was the advisor, and they were the ones that did most of the marching, you know, just revered him. I mean, he was their guy. But he was a very polarizing figure, a mercurial kind of guy, and saw things in black and white, if you will, and was totally dedicated to, relieving the suffering of the people that he saw were suffering.
As a reporter, you got to kind of participate from the sidelines, if you will, or rather, you know, observed from the sidelines all of these demonstrations and marches going on in Milwaukee, or if not all, most of them. And you walked along the protesters who were marching for the open housing law at the 16th Street Viaduct. Can you describe what that was like for you?
As a reporter, you kind of detach yourself a little bit. You don't feel like you're really part of it. You're really a professional spectator, as I've often said. But it was pretty spooky at times. I mean, when we crossed the bridge on that famous march to the south side, and the young hoodlums at Crazy Jim's used car lot started throwing bottles and cans and bricks and stuff at you. Well, you were ducking and hoping not to get hit in the head with a brick or something. And then when they got to Kosciuszko Park on the south side, and it looked as if the white protesters were going to attack the marchers, and the Milwaukee cops, to calm the situation down, fired their shotguns in the air. I mean, you jump a foot off the ground. So it was pretty scary at times. And, of course, when they used tear gas, you know, that was the first time I'd ever tasted tear gas. That's not a pleasant thing. So in a sense, you were, you know, as a reporter, you're involved in it, but you're not involved in it because your job is to tell the story and tell it as straight as you can, but not to participate and not to take sides.
You talk about how the civil rights movement here in Milwaukee was all along surprisingly integrated and how it didn't attain the kind of militant stance that it did elsewhere in the country. Why was that?
Well, I think the civil rights movement itself went through different phases, and it did in Milwaukee as well, although just not to the same extent as in some other places. But right around the time of King's assassination, we had the rise of a thing called Black Power and the Black Panthers and everything like that. And that was a group of among Black folks who were rejecting white participation. They were going to basically do it on their own. But you have to remember that all of the early civil rights demonstrations in Milwaukee followed, you know, whoever was doing it, the original core demonstrations with John Givens and the school integration stuff with Lloyd Barbie and Marilyn Moorhauser and open housing with Father Grappi and other people, they all followed the Martin Luther King Jr. integrated nonviolent protest. I mean, that was the hallmark of everything that King did. It was nonviolent, it was integrated. And that's what they followed.
Well, Frank Alkofer, thank you so much again for talking with us today and for sharing your memories of covering the civil rights movement here in Milwaukee.
Thank you.
Frank Alkofer is the retired Washington Bureau Chief of the Milwaukee Journal and its successor, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is also the author of the book City with a Chance, which chronicled his experiences as a civil rights reporter in Milwaukee. It was first published in 1968. His memoir, Never a Slow Day, Adventures of a 20th Century Newspaper Reporter, was recently published by Marquette University Press. He spoke with Stephanie Lecce on the phone from Seattle. In the last two interviews, we heard about many significant events in the civil rights movement here in Milwaukee. After the break, we meet a local woman who's working to make sure that history gets remembered. That's coming up next on Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.